Welcome to the Imagine Israel podcast, brought to you by the Jewish Federation of Greater Washington. Imagine Israel is the initiative of the Jewish Federation of Greater Washington, connecting Washingtonians to Israel and Israelis through the lens of social change. With every Imagine Israel podcast, we get to meet innovative Israeli influencers and changemakers, people addressing social and economic challenges in Israel. We'll hear from people whose lives and whose work intersect as they address issues in Israeli society. And I'm your host, Robbie Grindgrass, and I'm coming to you from Makom, the Israel Education Lab of the Jewish Agency for Israel. So one of the first times I met Rabbi Esteban Gottfried was at a Tel Aviv artist's soiree. All evening, while the party was going on, there were two blokes sitting at a piano, tinkling on the keys and giggling to themselves. Everybody else was being very sociable and very darling and witty and arty, until at the end of the evening, these two guys presented the results of their tinkering. It turns out that it was Esteban Gottfried accompanying on the piano while he and his mate Mendy launched into a Yiddish rendering of Bohemian Rhapsody. Yep, Bohemian Rhapsody in Yiddish, complete with a bit of a mama oy 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 oy. It was quite an event. 20 years later, one of the latest times that I've seen Esteban, he was involved in another surprising combination of seeming opposites. In the middle of secular Tel Aviv, on the branded-up Tel Aviv port full of expensive restaurants and expensive clothes shops, there was Esteban with a band and an audience of some 1,000 people running a Friday night synagogue service, outdoors, in front of the sea and the setting sun. And just like 20 years ago, those strange yet wonderful combinations of Yiddish and Freddie Mercury, this open-air service combined Israeli pop songs and traditional liturgy, Tel Aviv and Jerusalem, with the same mischievously serious creativity that I'd seen some 20 years previously at that strange party. If you ever make it to Tel Aviv during the summer months, you should go and participate in the Kabbalat Shabbat that Esteban's Beit Tefillah Yisraeli run. And until that happens, you should go to Roots, Jewish Day of Learning, on November the 5th, because Rabbi Esteban Gottfried will actually be there to introduce you to his unique approach to Jewish pluralism in Israel. But in the meantime, let's meet him ourselves. So, Esteban Gottfried.
Hi.
Lovely to meet you.
Nice to meet you too.
So, Esteban strikes me as a very traditional Israeli name. I'm assuming you were born and bred in Jerusalem.
Esteban is not a Hebrew name. My Hebrew name is Aaron. But, you know, a name, it's part of your identity. And I grew up in Argentina, and I made Aliyah when I was 18. And this 18 years that I was there, that was my name. And so that's the name that I kept.
And having come from Argentina, you started off studying to be a rabbi?
No, actually, when I was in Argentina, I was very involved in the Jewish life. I was already, when I was 15, 16, 17 years old, I was doing like rabbinical services in the provinces of Argentina. My rabbi and teacher, Rabbi Marshall Meyer, there was so big the need for people to do that he took people like me, like I was a kid, and he sent me to lead services for high holidays in different places. Even when I was 17, I already wrote a machzor, L'Rosh Hashanah V'Yom Kippur, for children, which
sort
is
a prayer book.
A prayer book for high holidays for children, which is in use until now.
Wow.
35 years later.
Only in Spanish?
It's in Spanish and Hebrew. Spanish and Hebrew. Yes.
Okay. So in Washington, I imagine not many people use it yet.
No. I can bring one like. So if I stay in Argentina, it was the logical move would be to go to a rabbinical school then. Uh-huh. When I was 18, as my brother did. My brother is a rabbi from Seminario in Buenos Aires, and then he moved to Brazil, and this is the rabbi of Sao Paulo in a conservative community for 25 years. And I remember myself sitting with my brother and trying to decide either to go to Seminario to be a rabbi or to go to Israel to be an actor and a writer and a screenwriter and film guy.
Which is basically the same thing, isn't it?
I don't know. That was a dilemma when I was 18.
These were the choices before you.
And the decision was to come to Israel, because only in Israel I can be free not to deal with Judaism and to do other things I like theater and cinema, etc. So that's what I did for 20 years. I studied here theater and...
You were an actor here?
Actor, director, and screenwriter, playwright. Yeah, I also got even two of the Israeli Oscars, the Ophir prizes, for one as an actor, one as a writer.
What, two different films?
No, for the same film that we got 7 awards,
wow.
2 were mine. I mean, because I was also the screenwriter and also the supporting actor.
So you're the Hollywood rabbi?
in the Israeli 90s film arena, which was not very big.
So to an extent, you were leaving the Jewish life of Argentina, coming to Israel in order to get away from the Jewish stuff.
Not to get away, but it was a different need. Uh-huh. But I thought that when I came to Israel, and I came with a great Hebrew, and it was very easy for me, but I didn't find in Israel the Judaism that made me come to Israel.
Ironically,
yes. The creative Judaism that I grew up with in Argentina, in camps, and I came to Israel and I saw different things, but I didn't find a community that I felt at home.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't find a synagogue, and for many years I understood that that's the way Israel is. I mean, you're in Israel, you don't need to go to a synagogue, because it's kind of redundant.
Uh-huh.
We are in a big shtetl, in a big shul, and you can do other things. You don't need to deal with being Jewish, because it's just yeah, it's a given by living here. But from time to time, I felt that something is missing. I needed a community, and I needed prayer, mm-hmm. and I needed to continue the tradition, which is it's more extensive than only the Israeli part of the Jewish quest.
Right. Right.
It struck me more when my daughter was born. I mean, when you think about, okay, so what am I giving to my children?
Huh.
And in a way, 20 years after my Aliyah,
mm-hmm.
I felt that that's the time to start to do something here, because the need became more pressing.
Mm-hmm.
Also, when in my theater career, I was very Jewish. I was very, I mean, the all the themes I wrote, my plays were all about Jewish and Zionist themes. And what happened before Beit Tfila started is that I finally found the people for different reasons, their reasons, they were looking for the same thing that I was looking for. So together we started this adventure, this chavura, this very small gatherings that 10 years later became like a very influential organization and community in Tel Aviv, which is Beit Tfila Israeli. And another funny thing is that I never decided to leave the theater or the film world. I just got absorbed into the Beit Tfila and what is happening and what we are doing, that I didn't have time to do other projects, but got immersed.
Evolved.
Yes, yes.
I'm sure that many people in Washington may well have even seen you or sang with you for Friday night in the summer when there's the Kabbalat Shabbat at the docks at the Namal in Tel Aviv. How did that start? And this idea that we're looking in the direction not of Jerusalem, but of this beautiful sunset.
Well, you have the answer in your question. Because if you have to decide to look to Jerusalem, which is the parking lot, or to look to the beautiful sunset on the Mediterranean, I think you don't have much choices.
Something of a no-brainer.
If you want to be inspired to pray, I mean, you can pray also in facing the parking lot, but it's a different feeling.
Blame God that the sea's on the wrong side.
it's a funny story. There are two different things. One is how we started to be in the port, and the second story is what it became, a phenomenon and a possibility that you can create and you can live and celebrate Judaism in the open space in Israel, in a liberal, progressive, Israeli authentic way, without apologizing and being non-alachic, non-orthodox. And to see also that if you do it with sincerity and for yourself, it speaks to hundreds and thousands of people. I mean, we were amazed about the response of the... When we came for the first time to the port, we just wanted to go out like a once-in-a-time thing, that let's do a prayer outside. We didn't think that we're going to change the Tel Aviv way of celebrating Shabbat. We just wanted for us to have a nice experience of praying outside, davening with this beautiful scenery. We started 150 people, and we ended this Kabbalat Shabbat like 300 or more, because people that went by passes by and they feel, okay, this speaks to me, this is my language, this is my this kind of Shabbat I will go. And that's how the first time, that it was 11 years ago, the first time we did our one time only Kabbalat Shabbat at the port. Uh-huh. The manager of the port, the director of the port, came to us after the service and said, can you do it every week, please? Because
it resonated.
And that's how we started. Now we are doing for 3 months, of even 4 months, from June to September in the port, every week with 1,000 people every Kabbalat Shabbat about. And other places, they started to ask us to, can you do it also for us in Herzliya, in Yehud, in Ashdod, in different cities. Also families that they want to create their community based on this way. And also municipalities that they want to offer to
their residents
this kind of experience of Shabbat outside.
Because for those who haven't attended, that what's particularly striking about these services in Israel is that they are not Orthodox services. There are men and women sitting together, and the prayers, some of them come from traditional liturgy, and some of them are Israeli pop songs turned into prayers or rediscovered as prayer. And when you think about it...
Reframed as prayers.
Reframed. Yeah. That's nice.
Yeah.
And this is happening in a public space. I'm thinking there are really only two other public spaces I know where public prayer takes place, and that's at the Kotel and up at Har Meron at the grave of Shimon Bar Yochai at Lag BaOmer, and then in Tel Aviv, there's Jewish prayer. It's not properly secular. It's not properly Orthodox. Mm-hmm. And that's unusual in Israel, isn't it? That it doesn't fit into a box?
Yes, I think part of the trick and part of the appealing of this is that you cannot put it in a specific box. And we have a very religious people that share with us that they have a really uplifting experience, and also very secular people. They share the same service. They are very, very different in their way, their outlook of the world and theology. And they share the same uplifting, inspiring, spiritual experience of receiving the Shabbat together. This is something that we didn't aim to this, but this is what you get when you dialogue with the people who are coming. And I think that the most important thing is that the underground invitation, that it's always there. Chevre, let's do something meaningful for us. We have an hour together. Let's do something meaningful. And I think this message passes through, And people, they say, okay, I'm here and I'm singing, and some they will sing the same song as a prayer, some they sing the same song as a you know, Yiddishkeit thing,
mm-hmm.
and some would sing to teach his daughter or son that there's a kind of connection with the something, and some will sing because it's fun to sing, and mm-hmm. it's spiritual also to sing.
Yes. Just. And so how are you going to bring the Israeli sunset to Washington?
With a PowerPoint.
That's great. So, Esteban Gottfried, you're going to be in Washington very soon. All the details will be at the end of this podcast, and together with links. And all that remains to say, thank you very much and have a lovely time in Washington.
Thank you. I'm looking forward. Bye, Washington.
If you enjoyed this preview of changemaker Rabbi Esteban Gottfried and his incredible work promoting Jewish pluralism in Israel, come and meet him in person, along with a great deal of other inspiring speakers, at the Jewish Federation of Greater Washington's Roots. It's a Jewish day of learning. It's on Sunday, November the 5th, at George Mason University in Fairfax, Virginia. And you can choose from over 20 thought-provoking sessions designed to nourish your spiritual growth and stimulate your intellectual journey. There'll be acclaimed instructors tackling tough subject matters such as using media to open difficult conversations about Israel and the emotional impact of the Six-Day War and developing a new narrative for our relationship with Israel. These are sort of some of the titles. It's an enlightening day that you will not want to miss. You can register now by visiting shalomdc.org/roots. That is shalomdc.org/routes. It's not the tree one, it's the journey one. And in general, you should know that the Jewish Federation of Greater Washington provides financial support to three religious streams in Israel: the Reform and the Conservative and the Modern Orthodox movements. It's a central component of our commitment to pluralism and inclusion. Among the programs supported by this funding are youth movements, leadership training, bar and bar mitzvah programs, elementary school networks, activities for young adults, and more and more and more. It's a central value for the Jewish Federation that Jews worldwide feel that their styles of Jewish expression can find a home in Israel. And Rabbi Esteban Gottfried is in the business of building a new home, an additional home for an Israeli Jewish style of expression. That, in effect, is the name of his synagogue, the Israeli Home of Prayer, Beit Tfila Yisraeli. And thank you for listening. This podcast, part of the Imagine Israel Initiative, is brought to you by the Jewish Federation of Greater Washington and hosted and produced by me, Robbie Greengrass of Macomb. You can find us on shalomdc.org/ImagineIsraelPodcast.